Now, the Cartoon Network takes you behind the scenes of world premiere tunes. Let's meet those Powerpuff Girls. This is Blossom.
Hi.
Bubbles and Buttercup. And this is Craig McCracken. He made them up.
It's just about three, like, little five-year-old kindergarten-age superheroes.
Blossom, this is the mayor. You've got to get downtown. Something terrible is happening.
Blossom, she's the leader. Bubbles is the little more kind of airheady one. And Buttercup is the real quiet but real tough one.
Yeah.
Everybody knows they're superheroes and they go to school like everybody else. But, you know, when duty calls, they've got to leave.
Let's roll.
Welcome to Checkered Childhood, a classic Cartoon Network podcast covering many, many years of Cartoon Network's history.
I'm Funky. I'm Fred.
Not now, boy. I'm busy. Tonight's the third night.
Greetings, Toonheads. It's your friend and host, B-Dubs, and this is Checkered Childhood, a classic Cartoon Network podcast dedicated to all things animation from the 1990s and early 2000s. Today we're taking the time to celebrate one of the most prolific cartoonists around by shining a spotlight on the highlights of his career. I'm talking about Craig McCracken, who you may know for creating the Powerpuff Girls, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, Wander Over Yonder on Disney XD, and most recently, Kid Cosmic on Netflix. While he's regarded as one of the leading animation icons surfing the wave of creator-driven cartoons of the 1990s at Cartoon Network, did you know he also had a hand in everything pivotal to the checkerboard era before his own show took flight? It's largely in part due to the unbreakable bond he shares through his friendship with fellow Cartoon Network legend, Genndy Tartakovsky, who will definitely get his own episode later on. But before we get ahead of ourselves, perhaps we should dial the clock back a couple of decades to witness the series of events leading McCracken down his path to glory. Ready to get to know the father of Powerpuff Girls a little better? Let's dig deeper into his legacy to better understand why he's beloved by Cartoon Network fans across multiple generations. Humble beginnings. Craig Douglas McCracken was born on March 31, 1971, in Charleroi, Pennsylvania, where he fostered his love of drawing since the age of three. Craig loved to take any inspiration he could from comic books he was reading, mainly the Belgian comics of Tintin or the Sunday comic strips of Charles Schulz and Bill Watterson. He also resonated with Saturday morning cartoons like Super Friends, Underdog, and Rocky and Bullwinkle. When he was 7 years old, his father, Robert McCracken, unfortunately passed away, leading him and his mother to move to Whittier, California, where he would attend high school. There, he had a typical upbringing on the West Coast. Things, however, would take a significant turn once he went off to CalArts for college. During his freshman year at CalArts in June of 1991, McCracken felt inspired to make an animated short about a wrestler character named El Fuego. While the idea of the character ultimately failed to materialize, a concept far better emerged. Three little girls who looked cute and innocent, but packed a real punch in action. These character designs drew cues from painter Margaret Keane's artwork of the 1960s, along with UPA cartoons popular at the time, which are identifiable by highly rendered childlike characters with huge eyes and flat graphic shapes, respectively. McCracken mentioned he chose the look of these characters for, quote, diversity in balance, and made it a point to construct a birthday card as a present for his brother by cutting out his drawing and attaching it to an orange piece of construction paper with the words, whip-ass stew, beneath the girls. He was onto something. But in the meantime, McCracken focused on entering shorts into film festivals for exposure. Let's sidestep for a moment to McCracken's next project, No Neck Joe.
No Neck Joe!
This unusual batch of five film shorts were made across a few weeks for the Spike and Mike's Sick and Twisted Animation Film Festival in 1991, at a time where alternative offbeat animation was in. The shorts featured a cheerful young male character named Joe experiencing strange situations as a commentary on having no neck. For example, Joe had a dream of himself showing off a really long neck in front of two guys in town who bully him, or there's another instance where he was being disappointed by getting a necktie as a present. It didn't have much substance, and the shorts often left festival goers confused. Didn't help that the shorts had a mid-70s look to them, set to wonky carnival music to further add to the confusion. But experience is experience nonetheless, and it was enough of a confidence boost to encourage McCracken to keep on animating. According to one Redditor, Spike and Mike paid for Craig's tuition, sometimes even his vehicle, so he could produce these shorts for their festival. Hey, at least the owners liked it. Just a short year later, McCracken revisited his whoop-ass stew idea to expand it into his own animated short in 1992.
Thus, the Whoop Girls were born.
Inspired by the cheesy, colorful 1960s Batman starring Adam West, the animator believed the stark contrast of little girls and violence created a unique balance of humor that made his idea too irresistible to ignore. By September 1st, 1992, his first and only animated short derived from the birthday card titled The Whoop-Ass Girls in A Sticky Situation, and starred three pint-sized heroines, albeit a little taller and more stretched out, battling the Amoeba Boys, who kept getting stuck to them in combat after a bank robbery. The short lasted a little over 3 minutes, but it was enough to get a clear idea of just who Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup would become as they beat up the Gangrene Gang and straight up killing the Amoeba Boys by flying them straight into the sun to be vaporized. Man, now that's brutal. Here's what Craig recalls regarding his student film, as mentioned in an interview for the Powerpuff Girls DVD box set.
Basically what happened is as soon as I started on the film, I kind of stopped going to class and just stayed up in my cubicle the whole time working on the film. And, you know, at the end of the year, you know, you're supposed to turn in your student films and, you know, get your grades on it. And I turned it in and none of the teachers knew who I was. And they were just watching this film. They're like, who is this guy? Where does he come from? And they're like, oh, he's really quiet and he sits up in the back and, you know, he's just made this film and he never comes to class. And they're like, this is great. This is amazing. Give him a high pass. So, you know, I got a good grade on it, but, I, you know, it didn't really end up going to class because I was just kind of obsessed with finishing this film.
Besides the longer proportions of the girls and slightly off models of the villains, it's worth noting too how Professor Utonium here more closely resembles the finalized version of Dexter's character design from Dexter's Lab, though with a pointier head. Same gloves and lab coat though. The short had minimal animation, one voice actress for all three girls, and awkward timing, leaving Whoop-Ass Stew to having mixed reviews upon its initial release. Despite such underwhelming reception, Craig remained true to his vision and continued to nurture it until he was ready to fly free from his personal project nest. But for now, it had to sit on the back burner once more. Craig McCracken originally intended to make four of these shorts, but only managed to make one, because after graduating CalArts, the next step in his career would be into a cartoon incubator for his raw talent. HB Pencil Testing.
Most of the shows are being created by fresh, new faces.
Yeah, these are the Powerpuff Girls. Those are three little girls that are like in kindergarten. They fly around and save the day, beat up bad guys and stuff.
By this time, Craig McCracken was busy working on new projects at Hanna-Barbera Studios in 1993. He, alongside his college buddies Gendy Tartakovsky and Rob Renzetti, would work on the first Hanna-Barbera 90s original cartoon, Two Stupid Dogs, as an art director. During production of the show, Craig mentioned how he never really liked how that show worked, according to a 2002 IGN brief interview. Luckily, as McCracken continued to make a name for himself at the studio, he prepared himself for a golden opportunity just around the corner. Once 1995 rolled around, Fred Seibert, an icon in his own right, pitched and developed a radical idea where the talent would come to the studio to create fresh, edgy cartoons as a part of an anthology, The What a Cartoon Show.
You know the Powerpuff Girls as defenders of truth, justice, and a meatless society. But you've never seen them like this before. The Powerpuff Girls are back, but they're not the same. The Powerpuff Girls are bad, bad apples, and they're rotten to the core. Or are they? Watch for a brand new world premiere soon starring the Powerpuff Girls, Sunday at 7 p.m., only on Cartoon Network.
If you haven't listened to it yet, head over to episode 2 of this podcast to learn more about it. The idea of pitching fresh, new, innovative cartoons on a relatively young cartoon-themed channel excited McCracken. He lifted Whoop-Ass Stew off the shelf and put it to work by developing it into two pilots immediately. One, which featured a new foe, Fuzzy Lumpkins, and the other giving the Amoeba Boys another shot at crime. Craig successfully got his shorts onto the roster of toons, hoping to take their ideas to the next level, and he'd be picked up for series. One small change, though. Craig felt the network execs would never allow a show with the name The Whoop-Ass Girls to exist on their channel, for it was too abrasive for young audiences, and considering anything with the word ass would immediately be blocked by censors. McCracken opted to change the name to something that still resembles the essence of the three young superheroes. He settled on the Powerpuff Girls, blending the words Powder Puff and Power in perfect harmony to better reflect these characters' true essence. To further help his pilots stand out for their debut, McCracken guest starred on the cult classic Space Ghost Coast to Coast Season 2 premiere episode, President's Day Nightmare, on February 20th, 1995, as a part of the first annual World Premiere Tune-In event, which Space Ghost hosted on behalf of World Premiere Tunes.
Our last and final contestant is Craig McCracken. Citizen Craig McCracken, come on down.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
What do you do?
I make cartoons. I make the Powerpuff Girls, about these three little kindergarten-age superheroes who fly around and beat up bad guys.
Oh. Let's see the clip. That's great!
Why aren't you like a big sheep, just with like eyes cut in it, going like, woo, and scary? I mean, why is that? I mean, that's like a ghost.
Craig.
Meet Fuzzy Lumpkins would be the very first short of the very first What a Cartoon episode on this date, alongside with the Dexter's Lab pilot and Yucky Duck in short orders, while Crime 101 was later saved for episode 8A on January 28th, 1996. Powerpuff Girls wouldn't officially get the green light to become an original cartoon series on the channel until a couple of years later. You see, kids didn't quite understand the Powerpuff Girls at first when Meet Fuzzy Lumpkins tested with a group of 11-year-old boys at the studio. The audience complained that the designs were too simple and little girls couldn't be superheroes, as McCracken recalls in a 1999 interview. Perhaps they should have tested with adolescent girls instead? Disheartened and full of panic, McCracken almost changed his designs to be more realistic to satisfy the disappointed kids. But Mike Lazo insisted, stay true to your vision. Immediately, McCracken regained confidence in his show and doubled down on his efforts. Lazo, consequently, allowed him to take another crack at it by producing the Crime 101 short as a spiritual successor to the original Whoop-Ass Stew short, complete with a bank robbery scene by the Amoeba Boys. Thank goodness the amorphous villains just got wind knocked out of him this time and got put in jail rather than being burned alive in the sun. Way more palatable for a younger audience.
Watch out for another red hot episode of Whoop Stew.
After Dexter's Lab, Cow and Chicken, and Johnny Bravo got the green light to go to series, the Powerpuff Girls rounded out the roster when they joined the upper echelon of Cartoon Network cartoon cartoons of the Powerhouse era on November 18, 1998. In between What a Cartoon's premiere and his own flagship show beginning its run, McCracken helped his pal, good old Gandy, with storyboards and art direction to refine the look of Dexter's Lab and its multiple pilots as well. He went on to do art direction for the show with Paul Ruddish once it got greenlit, including the Dialing for Monkey and Justice Friends segments. By having a deeper understanding of character design and visual storytelling through this animation experience, McCracken further deepened his passion for creating memorable cartoons with characters boiled down to their true essence. Sugar, spice, and everything nice. After completing the first season of Dexter's Lab with Gandy Tartakovsky, the Powerpuff Girls aired for 6 seasons, 3 specials, and a feature-length movie, formally concluding on March 25, 2005, just a year after the Powerhouse era had become defunct. The show also got a 2010s reboot and other offshoot projects, but those are details best left for Powerpuff Girls' retrospective proper. The show often featured Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup balancing their home life with Professor Utonium, fighting crime in the city of Townsville, and attending school at Pokey Oaks Kindergarten. To McCracken's surprise, it was a huge hit with boys and girls alike. Gandy Tartakovsky also lent a hand in helping the show stand on its two legs by acting as supervising producer, co-producer, and storyboard artist in the show's first 3.5 seasons. Even McCracken's future wife and fellow animation icon, Lauren Faust, would join in on the production of Powerpuff Girls' original run. Games, toys, music, storybooks, and even an anime adaptation called Powerpuff Girls Z would quickly follow the series' mainstream acclaim that it received. The show was nominated for and won multiple Annie and Primetime Emmy Awards from 1999 to 2015, and to date, the Powerpuff Girls is considered one of Cartoon Network's flagship breakout properties. On the rise of Powerpuff Girls' success, Craig recalls in a recent video interview, "The dream of any cartoonist is to create a character that resonates with people and has global popularity. That's what I've always wanted to do. McCracken further adds, I've been very fortunate that the girls reached that level of success. However, just as things were getting good, gears would shift once more once Hanna-Barbera Studios shut down and the death of William Hanna in 2001 would signal an abrupt turning of the tides. Imagining a new series. Cartoon Network would migrate from Hanna-Barbera Studios to its own Cartoon Network studios in Burbank, California, around the same time Craig McCracken felt he did everything he could with the series. He decided to work on a new show and leave the remaining season under control of Chris Savino, who's known for Nickelodeon's The Loud House and practically everything major on Cartoon Network's roster during its formative years. After birthing the idea from adopting two dogs with his life companion and fellow cartoon creator Lauren Faust, Craig pitched this show selling the idea that this Victorian mansion contained abandoned imaginary friends who would reside here waiting to be adopted by new owners. While the network execs initially thought the pitch was too quote-unquote sad, Craig convinced them it would be a happy and colorful place where kids can visit and have fun. He soon got the green light and aired a 90-minute made-for-TV film of Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends to kick off the series on August 13, 2004. The film centered around a kid named Mac adopting the main friend of the show, a bouncy blue blob simply named Blue, as the two explore Madame Foster's home and even befriend a few other imaginary friends, along the likes of Wilt, Eduardo, Coco, and fellow home guardian, I guess, Frankie. The show was positively received and ran for 6 seasons, 72 episodes, until 2009. Deja Cartoon. During those tumultuous CN years where Cartoon Network rapidly shuffled through different ideas for its own eras, including the CN Real programming block, if you want to call it that, Craig McCracken hoped to recapture the magic he experienced during his early Hanna-Barbera days by developing a spiritual successor to the What a Cartoon show called Cartoonstitute, along with Robin Zetti and Rob Sorcher co-producing, and his wife Lauren also got into the mix by brainstorming the name and concept. This was done in 2008. Unfortunately, the think tank for cartoons didn't quite land like its predecessor this time around, as only 14 of the 39 planned shorts were produced, and consequently it was shut down in 2009. However, the attempt was not a total bust, as shows like Regular Show, Uncle Grandpa, and Star vs. the Forces of Evil emerged from the wreckage to be widely praised in their own respective series later on in the 2010s. Heck, even Regular Show is getting its own reboot, which was just announced, so there are plenty of nuggets of gold, even in a pile of rubble.
So far, this job is awesome. I still can't believe we get our own rooms.
Dude, those rooms aren't cool. There's nothing in them. I had to sleep on the floor last night.
McCracken would serve as executive producer for both of these CN pilots of the Cartoonstitute program, while the third entry got picked up on Disney XD later in 2015. Perhaps a clue was written in the stars for Craig here. I wonder. From CN to XD. By this time, Craig was taking note of the abrupt change of landscape at Cartoon Network, with the inclusion of more live-action-oriented shows to stay competitive with Nickelodeon, and he no longer felt at home with the Checker Channel as a result. McCracken drifted over to Disney to try his hand at making an animated series there on their XD spinoff channel, since he was aware other animators were making fresh, exciting shows like the mystery supernatural hit Gravity Falls. Consequently, Craig forged ahead with his wife to develop his third series, Wander Over Yonder, on October 16, 2013, which follows Wander and his steed Sylvia thwart the evil Lord Hater. The show exhibits a rather stretchy, cartoonish, spacey landscape, a mix of Yellow Submarine and Jay Ward in its psychedelic wavy animation style. McCracken himself likes to refer to Wander as a, quote, nomadic hippie Muppet Man. The show has also won several Annie and Primetime Emmy Awards and has been generally positive with the age 7 to 11 target audience of the channel, though many cite its quick cancellation due to low performance, compared to the likes of Gravity Falls and Phineas and Ferb. Contrary to belief, though, McCracken felt 2 seasons and 80 shorts was enough for Wander's universe, and instead retreated back to the drawing board and his home life for a few years. Like a kid again. Back in the 2000s, Craig McCracken made a short comic, The Kid from Planet Earth, as a means to explore other ideas in his head. He didn't think much of it at first, but it was special to him, so he held on to it for safekeeping. This was circa 2009. Little did he know, he would revisit it decades later to breathe new life into the idea and expand it into its very own show. In his first ever serialized animated series, McCracken would once again join forces with Rob Renzetti, along with Melissa Cobb, to co-executive produce the show, rebranded as Kid Cosmic. The Netflix exclusive aired for three seasons, from February 1st, 2021 to February 2nd, 2022, and features a ragtag group of desert-dwelling underdogs who learn the true meaning of being a superhero in their efforts to save the planet from evil aliens trying to steal back their rings of power. While the show harkens to the Powerpuff Girls in some regards, it also draws from a retro 2D 1950s, 60s rockabilly comic style with a dash of Kaiju, Tintin, and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers thrown into the mix. It's all kinds of awesome, and I highly recommend watching the entire series if you get a chance. New Horizons, Old Shows. Craig McCracken has undoubtedly achieved unparalleled fame, fortune, and notoriety through all of his animation endeavors throughout his four decades active in the industry, but he never did it alone. Most of his time, he had the help of a supportive wife, who also had a passion for animation, and great friends too, who battled in the trenches with him in his Hanna-Barbera studio days. But history repeats itself yet again, as mentioned in July of 2022, where he announced a reboot of both the Powerpuff Girls and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends would enter development under Hanna-Barbera Studios in Europe. It's called Foster's Funtime for Imaginary Friends, and it was announced during a 2024 Annecy Festival. Apparently, Blue and Madame Foster will be returning, but everyone else is a whole new cast of characters. I personally have yet to see current news materialize around both announcements, but I imagine they are still being silently developed. It was mentioned that Foster's would be aimed at a preschool audience this time, so I think it'll be fun to see how it materializes in potentially a different aesthetic for younger viewers. Moving on. In 2023, a year later, Craig McCracken would receive the prestigious Winsor McKay Award for his outstanding contribution to animation history. And it's rightfully earned, too.
I wanted to be a part of the magic that happens when a group of talented people get together and use their powers and abilities to create something new and amazing that the world has never seen before. And for the past 30 years in this industry, I have had the incredible fortune to do just that. To Mike Lazo and Linda Siminski, thank you for trusting me and not the data that said Powerpuff Girls was the worst cartoon ever made and whoever made it should be fired. Because this is what can happen when you ignore the data.
What's next for the legend and his equally awesome wife is anyone's guess. But hopefully we'll get more of that trademark spark of action, humor, and drive in vibrant characters we have experienced from his humble beginnings to his rise in superstardom. So we cover quite a bit of Craig McCracken's legacy and all the wonderful things he's accomplished in the meantime. But I'd like to share with you a moment some of my memories of Craig's work growing up watching Cartoon Network. I certainly remember watching Powerpuff Girls on What a Cartoon Show, both the Meet Fuzzy Lumpkins and the Crime 101 shorts. I didn't think too much of it at first. I really enjoyed the action, even it was a little bit too abrasive for my parents to witness while I was glued to the television, but it was a lot of fun. That moment where Bubbles gets angry at Fuzzy Lumpkins for turning her pigtail into, was it like a chicken bone or like a drumstick? Yeah, that always stuck with me. So it did leave a good impression, and it did inspire me to watch the rest of the series once it debuted during the Powerhouse era. I didn't watch the entire series, but I definitely watched it whenever I could find it on TV because it's quite a challenge to juggle things like homework, having a life, and watching shows that you're committed to on multiple channels. And I was partially a Fox Kids, Kids WB, and a Nickelodeon kid as well. But I got whatever I could. I particularly like the Bebo episode, Uh-Oh Dynamo, the one where there's like really old superheroes, anything with the Gangrene Gang, Boogie Frights, just to name a few. And Abracadabra, actually. That's a pretty creepy one. Watching the premiere of Foster's and many of its episodes growing up was surprising and fun. I think it actually premiered on Cartoon Network's Cartoon Theater because it was feature length. And I just remember it being very reminiscent of this other short that was on Cartoon Theater called Twice Upon a Time, which had a very flat graphic look, but that was made in the 70s. It was fun. It was a fun series, even if it had some annoying moments from Blue or Cheese or any of the other imaginary friends. But I enjoyed watching it with my younger brother, so I think it still holds up pretty well. I'm excited to see how the preschool version turns out, since I have a nephew who's in that age range right now. In terms of Wander Over Yonder, I didn't really get into it. I was in a different stage in my life where I wasn't watching cartoons as much. I did see it occasionally on Disney XD, though, when I was watching Gravity Falls. But I'm willing to give it a chance if I set aside some time to watch the series. Recently got into Kid Cosmic the past few days of recording this and writing the notes for this episode. And I gotta say, I absolutely love it. It is so much fun to see these characters go through all types of mishaps and mischief to understand how their power dynamic works within their team while trying to thwart various maniacal aliens from stealing the rings from them and creating destruction in the desert. And I'm excited to see where it ends up. I haven't gotten through the entire series yet, but I'm definitely making my way through it, and it's a lot of fun. I would say overall, this man's work has been a major influence in my life, despite never getting to meet him formally. But I hope that I get the opportunity to one day. And if any of you Toonheads have met him in person or done a video interview with him or anything like that, let me know your thoughts. What is Craig McCracken like in person? What is he like to get to talk to him, who has so much animation gravitas to his legacy and presence? So, with all that being said, why does Craig McCracken matter in the context of Cartoon Network and this podcast? Well, he might as well have a marble bust of himself in the Cartoon Network Hall of Fame in the year 2025. Undoubtedly, he is one of the most influential people of the network's history, not only for having a hand in a bunch of early foundational shows of the Checker Channel, but also championing two of his own, along with movies tied to them. Considering his achievement of earning a Winsor McKay Award for Best Animator in 2023, it's clear as day to see the man knows how to tell compelling visual stories like no other. Aside from Genndy Tartakovsky, of course, who is equally masterful in his craft and also has his own Netflix series. Without McCracken, Cartoon Network would be a lot less exciting and a lot more hollow. And it's all thanks to his love of drawing, inspired by the great cartoons before him, and never giving up on a dream. It just goes to show that with friends and family there to support you, Craig is proof that the sky's the limit. All right, Toonheads, I think the day is saved thanks to Craig McCracken's legacy. So we're going to close up shop and head on home. But before I go, here's a question for you. What do you love most about Craig McCracken's animated work? Is it just watching his shows, or his art style, or love learning about the stories of what made his cartoons what they are today? Whatever your thoughts are, email me at checkyourchildhood@gmail.com, or just drop a comment in the YouTube video comment section. If you enjoyed this episode, you can also rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, iHeart, or basically wherever else you listen to your preferred podcast platforms. Don't forget to tell a friend too about this podcast so that they can also enjoy and be informed of the various Cartoon Network topics we cover. All right, check in next time when we sneak into Dexter's lab and witness the most memorable inventions, adventures, and DD mishaps with our top 10 Dexter's Lab episodes. This will be of the first two seasons, by the way, not the entire series. Which ones will Dexter's computer decode for us? It won't be quite like a favorites list, which I intend to do later on, but you'll just have to listen to episode 11 to find out for sure. Thank you, fellow Toonheads, for being here today. I really love sharing these Checker childhood memories with you, and it means a lot to me that you take time out of your busy day to listen to this little show of mine. I hope that we can do it again soon and have some more nostalgic fun. In the meantime, I think Dexter needs a hand finishing his latest greatest invention before Dee Dee throws a monkey wrench into the mix. Uh-oh. I hear some noise clanging in his lab already. Have a tunerific day, my friends. Later.
Aren't you late for something?
Mm-mm. No. Oh, I get it.
And it's not funny, is it?
No, Space Ghost.
Get a haircut, McCracken.